Good evening, it's 9 o'clock on Sunday the 25th of July. Time for Beyond Belief. You're very welcome to Beyond Belief on this Sunday evening. Stephen Flesher with you for the next 60 minutes. And we have a slightly different programme for you this evening, as this is the last in our current series of programmes. But don't worry, as usual, we're just taking our summer break during August, and we'll be back with you refreshed and renewed in September. So tonight, each of our presenters has picked some of their favourite pieces from the last 12 months. We really do have a packed programme for you tonight. Less music, more stories, and even some chat. So, let's start with this.
Here we are again, happy as can be, all good pals and jolly good company.
You're tuned to Beyond Belief on this Sunday evening. Nice to have you with us. And using the power of the internet, I've been joined online by my friend Jerry Kenny from Kilkee.
A very good evening to you, Stephen, as we move towards the end of another month. July is disappearing on us, I'm afraid.
It is, and what glorious weather you've been having and we've been having. We've been really blessed with weather. I won't say it's too hot, but my goodness me, it's certainly been taking its toll. It saps the energy so much, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does. And here in Kilkee, it literally is packed. And I was just down at the beach earlier in the week, and it was like a scene out of, say, one of the continental beaches. It was just marvellous to see all of the families down there, and people in the water, and a great hive of activity, and great for the economy of West Clare.
You know, that it's been a hard time, hasn't it, for nearly 2 years, really, certainly 18 months, and an opportunity to at least recoup some of the money that's been lost over that time. So it's really good news. And the fact that people can't travel abroad that easily means that they'll be more keen to spend some time on the West Coast there, and that's absolutely brilliant.
Of course, one of the challenges as well, though, in all of this, for the businesses, especially for our restaurants and the food outlets and the pubs, is negotiating around opening up. Now, they've managed fine over the past few weeks with outdoor dining and outdoor serving. But this week now, with the transition into some indoor dining, it sounds like quite a complicated thing, and I'm sure it's going to put a little bit more hassle on all of the businesses to engage with the form checking and the certificate checking and all the rest of it that has to be done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is sounding still that word of caution that we all have, because the daily numbers of people contracting the virus are still very, very high, up in the thousands.
That's right.
And we need to be still reminded that, COVID is still around.
Yeah, and it's interesting that in an opinion poll here in England, 60% of the people were saying that they would continue with the restrictions, particularly the masks and things like that, and being very careful. They'd continue with that despite this much vaunted Freedom Day that Boris was talking about on the 19th, you know, when all the restrictions would go. But people are saying, no, you know, we don't want to get on a bus or something like that with people that haven't got masks. And so it's not the Freedom Day that we were all expecting, I think, and quite right too.
In recent weeks, the vaccination rollout opened up to the pharmacies, to those that were in a younger age group, and there was quite an uptake on it, and the pharmacists are very pleased, and I think the country is very pleased that a lot of our young people wanted to get the vaccine. And now even the state system of the rollout of the vaccine is down as far as the 18 plus can now register on the state system with the HSE here to get the rollout of the standard vaccine as well. So, you know, the hope is that they feel that they're a little bit ahead of their plan to roll out the vaccine. And the hope is that, in the next month or so that, you know, most of the population will have been vaccinated.
That's
certainly
brilliant.
Those 18 plus.
Yeah, well, it certainly gives you more confidence about going back. But I think what we have to realise is that we're going to have to be living with COVID for some time to come. One of the things that brought it home to me, and I was talking to my friend who is the priest here in the two churches that I'm involved with, the local bishop here has offered to license me as a licensed lay minister, which is like a reader, and that will be on the 4th of September. And so we have to get back to England for that. And of course, you just have to realise that things can change, and you know, we don't know what restrictions will happen from week to week, never mind month to month. So we've had to qualify the invitations that I've sent out to people by saying, look, you know, things may change. We're living in a post COVID world, and we can't be sure. The certainties that we had 2 years ago, I'm afraid, no longer apply, and everything is subject to the virus being continued to be controlled. And as you say, at the moment, the numbers are going up in England as well. But we're hopeful that we will be able to get back, courtesy of Mr. O'Leary, and we'll be back in England for the licensing service, and then fly back to continue our break back in Kilrush. I suppose we should give thanks, really, that we've been able to continue to produce the programme using the internet, and everyone has been contributing. As I said last week, you know, this is now, I think, number 76 of what I'm calling the virus shows that we've been put together remotely. Sometimes I put them together when I've been in Kilrush when the pandemic started and the lockdown started. The other ones I've done here from England.
It is. We certainly, I think, when the pandemic started, Stephen, and you and I were operating from your little studio there in Kilrush, we thought it was going to be just a temporary measure for a few weeks, and then we'd be back in doing our usual thing in the studios in Ennis, but that wasn't to be. But, you know, it's been, as you say, it's been a challenge. It's certainly been different in how we've been able to look at our programmes, but it's been great that we've all been able to in some way make our contributions, and thanks to you for being the person that has knitted them all together, which is always the difficult task, because you're trying to watch the clock and seeing where we need to sharpen up and edit and so on, and that is quite a major task.
It's something that I'm happy to have been able to do. And who knows whether we'll continue with this sort of format or when the studios are reopened, and we don't know when that'll be yet.
Again, as you're saying, there's so much that we can't plan for definite now. We just have to take it week by week, or
we do.
Even in some cases day by day.
Yep.
And, you know, the overriding thing is, I suppose, like that we are monitoring the public health situation.
That's right.
The thing I think is about it, though, now that it has gone on for so long, for almost 18 months, there is a certain wearisome for everybody. While we realise that we have to keep focused on this, it does get a little bit wearisome, and I think that's the difficulty and that's the challenge for everybody. And that's why maybe, you know, people are saying, oh, well, the government should be doing this and they should be doing that, and why is this not happening and why is that not opening and so on. So there is that little bit of frustration, I think, creeping in for all of us around the regulations and that, because it's hard to continue on. But this is the major challenge, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, you could almost make a case for the fact that we've been overcautious with things like the COVID app. As you move around, it can sense who you've been close to. And if you've been close to someone who tested positive for COVID, then it pings you, and then you're meant to stop and shield and isolate yourself for 10 days, which is all very well, and you think that would be very sensible. But the problem is that, particularly in some businesses, in the health service, in schools, in this week, there were 500,000 children who weren't at school because somebody in the bubble that they were in had tested positive, and so suddenly they're all away. And so we've got that number of children who haven't been able to go to school for 10 days. And of course, this is a rolling thing, and it's causing problems. They can't get enough lorry drivers because, you know, somebody in the organisation has tested positive, and suddenly, like wildfire, these pings go off across on these apps that they've got on their phones, and they all have to stop work and go home. And, you know, things like the health service are suffering from it. And that even things like we had a note through from our council to say that waste collections are being affected because they're all sitting in a cab together. And of course, suddenly one of them gets a positive result and ping, 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 all the others have to go home and self-isolate for 10 days. And, you know, it is causing big problems in people trying to keep their businesses going, because now, of course, as we're opening up, restaurants that have been closed for so long are suddenly open, but then one of the staff gets pinged and the whole lot has to shut down. So we've got restaurants that opened for a couple of days and then they have it closed for 10 days. And so it's causing an economic problem, and perhaps it's a case of being a bit too cautious, I don't know.
Well, we just have to soldier on, I suppose, Stephen, and hope for the best. But anyway, on our programme tonight, there's quite a variety. We're tapping into some of the special interviews we did over the past season, and I hope that people will enjoy those conversations. And again, thanks to you, Stephen, for all your help and assistance in helping us to get to Beyond Belief on air every Sunday night.
Well, that's very kind, Jerry. Thank you. Yeah, I think there's a sort of an end-of-term feel about the programme tonight, I think you'll find. Holidays are about to start. We've got the whole of August off, and I shall look forward to seeing you in Kilkee and even swimming in the bay there. So great to talk to you again, Jerry, and I'm sure next time we talk, it will be face-to-face.
God bless you, Stephen, and thank you very much. God bless.
And you. Bye, Jerry.
Beyond Belief on Clare FM.
Early in December last year, we handed over the entire Beyond Belief programme to the young people of the Diocese of Killaloe. They had complete freedom. They decided on the content and who to interview, and then conducted the interviews. Here's Saoirse Boyce interviewing the former Clare hurler and author, Tony Griffin.
I'd like to welcome Tony Griffin here on Beyond Belief. Tony, you're very welcome to the show. We all know you as Tony Griffin, who hurled for Clare Trap and Aussies. But what are you up to now, Tony?
I'm a dad to two boys, a five-year-old who's playing the piano downstairs, can hear him in the background, and trying to play the piano, and a six-month-old. I live in Kildare. It's called Ballymore Eustace. And I spend a lot of my time at the moment writing, and we might get to chat about that later. And played a little bit of hurling last summer with Ballyhale, and travelled home for that. But I'm just trying to stay healthy. That's my main thing at the moment.
You work with a foundation called SOAR. Could you tell me a bit about this?
Yeah, so SOAR was something that myself and another guy set up in 2012. We had seen the work of Jim Steins with in Australia. Jim, for those listeners that may not be aware of who he was an Irishman who went to Australia, to Melbourne, as a 17, 18-year-old to try and play Aussie rules professionally, and became very, very successful at that sport. He also set up an organisation for teenagers to kind of help them develop their character and their emotional resilience at that stage of their life, and it was a real success. I heard about it, I saw a documentary about him, and I just thought that would make such sense here in Ireland, that if I'd had that when I was a teenager, you know, life would have been maybe a little bit more easy to navigate. So we travelled to Melbourne, and we brought that organisation back to, or at least the elements of it. We called it SOAR here in Ireland. And so I ran that from 2012 to 2019. And now I just helped the new CEO and some of the guys there. But it was an amazing experience for 8 years to be traveling in and out of schools, learning from young people, listening to them and really trying to understand how we could support them. And it gave me a lot of challenges and a lot of very, very good experiences as well. So it's still flying it, even amidst COVID. They've adapted and they're in to grow again.
You mentioned the word challenges there, Tony. You took on a major challenge in your life a few years ago in Canada. Could you tell me about this?
Yeah, so I was playing with Clare at the time, but I had been since 2004 to 2008, I commuted from a place called Halifax in Nova Scotia back to Ireland every 3 weeks to play for Clare and to continue to try and be a part of that team. And while there, my dad's Jerome got ill. He had asbestosis, which is a form of lung cancer from being exposed to asbestos. And I didn't get back in time to see him pass in 2005. In 2006, I played hurling full time with Clare. I came back and gave up university for a year. And then in 2007, I had an idea to cycle a bicycle from one side of Canada, from the Pacific Ocean, Vancouver, to the Atlantic Ocean in Halifax. And the first three people I said, I'm thinking about doing this thing in memory of my father to raise some money. They said, oh, that's crazy. And all three ended up coming with me to help out. So it's an incredible experience. I never cycled more than, I'd say, 25 kilometers in my life in one day. And it was 150 kilometers a day for an average for 51 days. So it was like cycling from, you know, Dublin to Moscow and back. And it raised a lot of money for, like I said, Caracalla, who do great work, and for a lot of other organizations. And it was probably one of the most incredible experiences of my life, because it taught me so much about having a desire to do something and then sticking with it, even when people doubt you and you doubt yourself. And if you do that, incredible things can come your way.
Is there a standout moment or event from that cycle that has stuck with you?
There's a few. I remember very often I cycle, you know, around a corner and the most amazing view would meet me, like of a mountain on the side of the Rockies or, you know, the prairies. Just, and I remember stopping and saying, put this in your memory bank and don't ever forget it. But we tend to even forget the most incredible moments, no matter where we've stored the photograph, in our brain or in our phone, we forget them. But I suppose I remember some of the feelings. I remember one in particular day, we're coming into, I think it was Saskatoon, which is the kind of the main city in Saskatchewan. It's a prairie state or province, so it's very flat. And we'd gone through a lot of difficulty because the winds picked up and there was a storm. So for 3 days, I was like crawling in this like wilderness of a prairie with no trees or no cover. And I remember we were getting close to Saskatoon and this man was waiting up ahead in a Clare jersey. And I thought it was a Clare jersey from like a kilometer away. You could see it was so flat. And as I got closer, he just started cycling with me. And I kind of was waiting for him to introduce himself. And he just said, you know, I wanted to come and join you. I heard about what you're doing. And then he just, he had sunglasses on. And from underneath his sunglasses, I realized he was crying. And he said, my daughter took her own life a few weeks ago. And I just thought this would be good for me to get out and to do something positive. And I read about you in the paper. And I've been waiting on the road here for hours to meet you. And I just remember thinking, wow. And we just talked and he wept and talked about his life. And he was a school teacher from, that had emigrated from Ireland. And I know, I've never seen him since, but I know it was so cathartic to him, that half an hour we spent together, that I've always remembered it and hoped that it was of benefit to him.
I'm sure it was a benefit to him. That's a really lovely story, Tony. Speaking of stories, you've a book coming out soon. What's the name of that book?
The book is called A Teenager's Book of Life.
What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I think given the times that we're in, they're challenging for everybody, parents and teenagers. And I spent 8 years going in and out to schools all over Ireland, meeting teenagers of every, you know, description in terms of where they're at in their life. And then very often meeting a lot of parents who were struggling or were finding it difficult being a parent. And I wanted to write something that was kind of like a book of hope for parents and teenagers. You know, a book that would help parents and teenagers almost find common ground and have more understanding of each other. It's a difficult period when you're a teenager, as I recall, and it can be very difficult being a parent to a teenager. So I wanted to write a book for teenagers primarily that would kind of reassure, offer them reassurance and hope they are understood and that there is a reason for being. And for parents, I wanted to almost offer a map to help them navigate this really uncertain, difficult time of being a parent to a teenager. And really, seriously, my hope was in writing it that when both those elements come together, you know, understanding almost becomes the bedrock and the relationship between the parent and the teenager is better. So that it's a book for teenagers, but for every parent that picks it up and reads it, I think they'll get a huge amount in how to relate to, understand, and potentially have a better relationship with their teenager.
Tony, what does spirituality mean to you?
I would consider myself deeply spiritual. I think I always have, and I've been curious about how to express that in a way that means something to me. I'd be very much aware, since my father passed even, that there is another dimension or another sphere to all of us as human beings. And I kind of write about that bit in the book, is that I believe in that we are, you know, a soul having a physical experience and not the other way around. And I would, over the years, have become comfortable with having my own way of connecting with my own spirituality. For me, very often that's nature, even the sea, you know, woodland. We live close to the mountains. I feel spiritually connected, I suppose, when I'm in those environments. I've meditated since I was probably 17, 18, so that's another way. And I talked to, you know, I had a picture of my granny in front of me as I was writing the book. I had a picture of a young guy from Ballyhea that passed away during the year. And they were nice ways of me connecting with the belief that there is much more to us than we see or think. And that force, or whatever you want to call it, can play and does play a huge part in our lives when we ask it to, which I do. Now, I don't go to Mass. It's just not the way I connect to my own spirituality. But I would have a real faith that there is something there that I can turn to when I need to, or just turn to on a daily basis to thank it for the fact that I'm having this experience in this lifetime. So my big interest lately is near-death experiences. I've become infatuated with it. So I'm like reading everything I can find on on near-death experiences, because I think we could learn a lot. I think we could learn a lot from death and as a people, because we are much more surrounded by daily death numbers on the news and everywhere else. We're kind of being forced into having more of a conversation about death, dying, and what that means for living.
You're a Clare man at heart, Tony. Do you ever see yourself returning to the Banner County?
Oh, yeah, like I definitely do. Like, I love the west coast of Clare. And when I moved to Kildare, where my wife is from, I found that I was almost grieving for the sea. I missed the sea. I missed the west Clare, even though I'm from kind of mid-Clare. So maybe one day, who knows, I might be fortunate enough to have a place in Ballyvaughan or Doolin or you know, somewhere along the coast that I can go to. And that would be a dream come true if that happened. But I have family, a lot of family. My mother and brothers and sisters are in Clare, so I get back, not as much as I'd like, but when you have small kids it's hard. But I know, like, even the day we're looking forward to Clare playing matches, they're big days for me. And I'm so proud people like Tony Kelly, you know, Jack Brown, Paul Flanagan, these kind of guys would make you just be really proud to be from where you're from.
Thank you so much for joining me here tonight, Tony. Could you just repeat there again the name of your book for anyone who didn't catch it earlier?
Yeah, it's called The Teenager's Book of Life. And good. From December, they can go onto my website, tonygriffin.ie, where they'll be able to get a copy. And I'm really looking forward to hearing how it's received. It took me 8 years to write it, so I'm looking forward to seeing what people benefit from it.
I really look forward to reading it myself, so thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
My colleague Brendan O'Brien was also busy at St Flannan's College, talking to students who were helping to support the St Vincent de Paul charity in Ennis.
And I'm delighted now to be joined by the youth group of the St Vincent de Paul chapter here in St Flannan's College in Ennis. So I'm going to talk now to the young people just to find out a little bit about who they are, what year they are at school, and what kind of projects that they are involved in.
So, hi, I'm Killian O'Riordan. I'm in Leaving Cert. And why I joined the St. Vincent de Paul youth group in Flannans is because it feels really good to help the less fortunate in the area. And also, even in Junior Cert, I learned a lot about the organisation and the founder. And obviously, you know, as we know, he was just barely a couple of years older than us. And, you know, and the amount of work he did to help the homeless people of Paris. And when I heard that there was an organisation, the SCP group in Flannans, I just knew I had to join straight away.
And you speak there about the founder and the inspiration for the work itself. So in terms of how St Vincent de Paul himself has inspired you, you mentioned kind of some of the projects there, like the homelessness. And I know, just speaking to some past members here, that you have done things like had a clothes gathering and you recycled old clothes and other projects like that. I think, do you do a sleep out as well?
Yeah, we definitely, for the past 2 years, we've done a sleep out, but this one was just for Folks Ireland. But this year, due to COVID, we couldn't do a full one, so just the TYs just went out and did it in their in their back gardens. And also, yeah, well, COVID. And even this year, we're going to do another spring clean. This is annual. And obviously, this is, as you said, was you went around and we encouraged the families of the school and local community to get any sort of clothing that they have to, you know, bring it in. Bring it in just a week after the Easter holidays, and we'll be outside in the school waiting for them to collect. Members are there on break times, after schools, and even on Saturdays. And at the end of it all, a member of the SUV will come in and they'll collect it. We usually will have vans and stuff, which is great.
It is great, yeah. And I'm really impressed. Like, I imagine you being a Leaving Cert student, that the amount of study that you have to do, and you've taken on this extra commitment. That's remarkable.
Like I said before, it just feels great. When I first got into this in TY, I didn't never realise how much I actually enjoy it as well. And you know, and I really did. So I decided to keep it up until now. So henceforth, I'm here.
Excellent, and well done. I really admire the commitment that you're giving. So maybe now if I just talk to some of the newer members in terms of how you got involved with the group. I imagine you're first year, second years now, and just in terms of what being a member is like for somebody new to the group.
I'm Connor Clancy from Clooney Quinn, and I'm in second year in St. Clement's College. I joined last year, first year, because I was asked at the food and toy appeal to help out. And I realised that day that I really enjoyed doing it and helping other people through Christmas. So I just wanted to continue. But sadly, I didn't get to do the rest of the like things such as the spring clean because of COVID.
Great hurling parish that there, Clooney Quinn. And it's no wonder you're coming to school here in Flannan's College. But let's focus a little bit more now, because I imagine, given the different places that people come from, you're not only relying on the support from school, but you're obviously getting support from people in your local area as well.
Oh yeah, definitely, especially from the students in school. During the food and toy appeal, we'd ask them to bring in food and toys for children and families at the Christmas time, and we get loads and loads of it. Last year I was like just in surprise of how much people brought in and how much people wanted to help. So yeah, loads of support from
all over.
Yeah
Excellent. So now, so far we've spoken to two male members of the group, so we better speak to some of the females or I won't get out of Flannan's College alive.
I'm Jane Ring and I'm in third year in Flannan's, and I joined the SVP because I wasn't thinking of myself, I was thinking of other people and the less fortunate, and even people who've just hit a little bump in the road, that SVP helps them get back on track, and it's like a really rewarding feeling knowing that you can do that for the group.
That's an interesting phrase you used there about hitting a bump on the road. Here in school, are you very much aware of people hitting the bump on the road in your community, or why does that inspire you?
Yes, I mean, you would be aware that there's people around the school that wouldn't be as fortunate and could do an extra bit of help, and even just them knowing that there's an organisation in the school that helps out with that is really good to know, and they should know that it's there for them too.
That's fantastic that the students here and the people in the school and the local community know that there is a group that care very much about them on a day-to-day basis.
My name is Caitlin Earle and I'm a fifth year here in Flannan's, and I've been on the St. Vince Paul Junior Committee since first year. So we every year, as it's been mentioned, we do our annual spring clean, where we encourage people again to clean their homes over Easter of all like clothes and fabric, new or old. And they can bring it into here and we'll collect it and everything will go St. Vincent de Paul.
And I'm very interested that you've been part of it right from first year up to now. What is it that keeps you involved and keeps you motivated to stay with it? You seem to be passionate about your work for Vincent de Paul here in the college.
Yeah, I really enjoy helping people, and it feels very good to be actually doing stuff instead of just talking about it. So with like toy appeal and food appeal and the clothes appeal, you actually get to see everything piling up, and how knowing it's all going to go to a good place is feeling really good.
That's excellent. I like how you emphasise there about it going to a good place. But maybe tell me a bit more about, do you concentrate, do you aim to raise a certain amount of money? Do you aim to kind of get so much clothing in, or in terms of the organisation of it?
Every time there's an event that goes on to help the community, usually there is no set goal, but because usually the students, to be fair, they bring in a lot of stuff and we always end up with a good bit of money and a good bit of food and toys for the less fortunate.
Excellent. So you're relying very much on the generosity of the school community, and it seems that they respond extremely generously. Tell me a little bit about how the meetings work. Obviously, you know, you're gaining great skills there in terms of leadership and learning about how an organisation works.
Usually at the start of the year, we divide it into different roles, and from there then we discuss different events, the plan for the year, what we're going to do and how it's going to affect St Vincent de Paul.
We work very closely with the shop here in Ennis on near the Mill Road. James, we work with him a lot. He'll always come with the vans after the clothes peel and the food and toy peel. And he's been in a few times to talk as well. None of us do voluntary work because we're all under 18, but as soon as I turn 18, I know I'm definitely going to try and help in the shop.
Excellent. Thanks very much for that. Again, just maybe, would you just remind people who you are and where you come from?
Okay. I'm Kate Nell and I'm in fifth year here.
And also, just kind of interested in terms of at Christmas time and being aware of the work that St Vincent de Paul do. They usually run an ad campaign on TV. How do you get people involved? Do you put posters up around the school?
Yeah, we put in posters around the school just to advertise the different events that St Vincent de Paul do around the year.
So this is from the 7th to the 11th of December. It's the annual toilet peel in aid of St Vincent de Paul. And it just toys will be collected from pupils each morning in first class, and it's new toys only, and just helps people in their local area and community.
That's fantastic. And you know, the new toys there, that, you know, basic principle is that whatever is good for you is good for others as well. And
and
that very much supports the work of Vincent de Paul. So again, just for the benefit of our listeners, maybe you'd like to tell them who you are.
Oh yeah, I'm Conan Fennell from in second year from Clunguin.
Okay, gee, Clooney Quinn is a strong element in this. I'm surrounded. Okay, there's great work going on here, and Christmas time, an important time. You know, there's an old adage there about pets, it's not just for Christmas. So the work that Vincent de Paul does here is not just for Christmas. So you have an exciting project coming online in the new year.
So this year, me and a few other girls from TY are putting together a plan to develop some social media pages for St Vincent de Paul shop and furniture shop. So we plan to go up every week just to get some new or fashionable clothes that we find nice and put them up on the websites or the social media pages to cause awareness for the shop.
Okay, so you're going to give boohoo.com and Essos and all those a good run for their money then in the new year, is that right?
Yeah, especially now it's very topical with sustainable clothing, fast fashion and all that kind of thing. So we think that if we get the right marketing and stuff, that it could be a really good idea for the town.
One thing that strikes me is that when it originated, and you mentioned the founder, when it started out as a church, religious organisation, and just in terms of your own commitment towards that, do any of you feel that your own faith has inspired you to be involved in Vincent de Paul, or is it more from because you're into justice and human rights and care about others?
So yeah, it's a bit of both. Like, I mean, I grew up in a fairly Christian household, so you know, going to Mass Sunday was just the norm for me. Like, but also I do care for people and people's rights, and you know, it's very disheartening to see other people suffering in a way like you would never want to suffer the way like some people would suffer, particularly in the local area. You see it, and you know, it's just really bad that it's going on. So I just knew I had to get involved.
Hi, my name is Emma. I'm in TUI here in Flannans. I got involved with the St Vincent de Paul because in being in TUI this year, we have a lot more spare time. So this year, we're hoping to set up the social media accounts for both the St Vincent de Paul shop on the Mill Road as well as the furniture shop on the Quinn Road. So every week, we'll be going down and looking through both the furniture shop and the clothes and putting them up on social media. We're hoping this will succeed because thrifting and sustainable clothing is all in fashion right now, and just to spread awareness about the two shops, and hopefully they'll get some more customers in.
Excellent. I wonder if Father McCormick has visions of having to open storage space for furniture in St. Flannan's College to be transported to the Quinn Road. But I'm sure he's a great support to the work that you do, as are all the staff here in the college, because you know, I can see, just do a quick count, there's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, there's 11 young people here, but I'm sure that's only a fraction of the people that are involved in the group. And again, that's right from first year to leaving cert. So with such a large group, I imagine keeping in touch and communicating is a challenge. But a lot of schools now, they're using Microsoft Teams.
Microsoft Teams is great because of COVID, we've had split lunch times. So we use Microsoft Teams. We set up a Teams for St. Vincent de Paul. And if anybody has an idea, we throw it in and see what the response is like. And we have a meeting once or twice a month and we talk about what we're going to do.
Wherever you go, we go. We go. Download the Clare FM app from the App Store or Play Store today. We're all about you,
Clare FM. You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday evening. Back at the end of April, I had the pleasure of chatting with Pather King, a native of Kilkee Parish, who over the years has documented the struggle for human rights right throughout our world in the television series What in the World that was broadcast on RTE Television. Access to some of those television programmes is still available on the RTE player. These programmes charted the struggles of individual people and communities right throughout the many continents of our world. Pather has also produced two books which document his reflections and his journeys to various parts of the world and the dilemmas that are faced by people and communities there. Those books, one is What in the World? And the other is called War, Suffering and the Struggle for Human Rights. Both books are published by the Liffey Press and available in all good bookstores. When I chatted with Pather last April, I asked him how he felt the pandemic was going to affect places in the world that he was familiar with. And I put to him the question that maybe we had become a little more inward looking during this time of pandemic, concerned with our own needs, rather than engaging with the broader vision that Pather and his programmes wanted us to engage with. The news is focused maybe on our own narrow world, and yet most of your work has been about trying to broaden our perspective on the larger world and what's happening there. Have you any reflection for us, Pather, at this stage about how that world that you engaged with prior to the pandemic and its suffering and its struggles, how that will pan out as we come out of this pandemic?
Okay, well, that's another really big and complex question, Jerry. I think, again, trying to distill it down into some kind of component parts that might be possibly get our heads around that. I think there are a number of key areas. One is that we tend to think about COVID as an interpersonal or a personal to person. But what it shows us is that it goes beyond that. It is about our relationships with nature, or certainly our relationships with animals. Like the view is that COVID, although it's not confirmed, emerged in these wet markets in Wuhan in China. So it is about the relationship between us as a human species and the animal kingdom. It is about us and the physical world, the natural world. What the term that people now are using is about the Anthropocene. It's about the totality of relationships between all living organisms, of which we happen just to be one within the world. So once you begin to think in that kind of vast, vast scale, it's very, very difficult for us to comprehend it. So I do think it within that, then, if you look at other kind of component parts, one of the key elements I think it addresses is around food production and how we produced food, food transportation, food consumption. And all of these kind of individual areas will have to be, we really need to think them through again. In addition to that, then, it's about our relationship with the pharma industry, our understanding of patents, our understanding of intellectual knowledge. I mean, the vaccines that have been produced by, you know, the vast majority of the cost has been borne by the public sector. So one of them, and I forget which one of them, was funded by 95% of taxpayers' money. And yet the pharmaceutical companies are claiming ownership and are patenting these. And by patenting them means that they're ring-fencing them and they're re-fencing them ultimately to drive stakeholder profit. And meanwhile, as you referenced with India and with Africa in particular, the people there can't access what have been publicly funded by, for the most part, European and American taxpayers. So there's also that other element in it of the economic injustice of it. There's also that notion of what is it to be private anymore? So that distinction between the private sector and the public sector has fractured completely. And I think that what has given us to realise is the importance of public sector. It also now challenges the notion of work and what is work and what is useful work and how is work valued and how is work remunerated. So now we hear, which is of course a terrible irony, that you know in Britain, for example, in the last budget, so for the last year, you had people standing outside hospitals cheering nurses and so on, and you had moments giving over where everybody stood and clapped, and yet nurses got 1% of a pay rise in the last budget in Britain, which is less than the cost of inflation. So there is that disconnect between the kind of rhetoric that we have brought to this and actual the policies that are following them. So all of these issues, and these are so big, each individual issue is so big almost to appear insurmountable, but these are the kinds of challenges that we will have to really begin to think about, not just in the next year, not just in the next 5 years. My guess is in the next decade and even onto the next 50 years. So we have to come over this intellectual dissonance, and there has to be that kind of really rigorous intellectual work that goes on around these issues and conceptualizing them and understanding them. And sometimes, that kind of intellectual work is downgraded and seen as, that is a luxury. I think that kind of engagement at an intellectual level with all of these issues has come center stage because we're asking fundamental and critical questions about what is the world, how do we organize ourselves in the world, where are the vulnerabilities in the world in terms of ecology and the human. So all of these are now up for discussion and evaluation and thinking through and trying to find ways in which we can live in a way that accommodates all of us. And by all of us, I just don't mean the human population. I mean all living organisms. And if that's not a big task, I don't know what is.
And that was Father King, a native of Kilkee Parish, broadcaster and television producer of the series What in the World, chatting with me last April on our programme here, Beyond Belief.
Many of our conversations during this past season on Beyond Belief have revolved around the coronavirus and the effect of lockdown on the different sectors of our community and society. One of the people that I caught up with during the year was Bishop Willie Walsh, who shared some of his experiences with us, including the loss of two of his siblings during the coronavirus and lockdown time. He reflected a little bit with me on that experience and asking the question, where is God in all of this?
You can look at these things from the outside, but when it comes as a direct experience, it does change the nature of it for you. And it was a difficult experience. My brother John, who's just a year and a half older than me, and in fact we were probably, I was closer to him probably than any of the rest of the family, for a very simple reason that he had a serious illness as a child and lost a year and a half from school. The result was that we came to Flannans the same time, did the leave in the same time. He went off to university, I went off to Maynooth. I was ordained a priest. roughly the same time, a short time before he qualified as a vet. So our lives ran very closely together. Now, he had suffered from Parkinson's in the last 20 years or so. So the quality of his life had become very poor, and he went into a nursing home, I think it was around last November, and he was going down all the time, and sadly he contacted COVID and died. And it was very difficult from the point of view that I wasn't able to visit him for a couple of months before he died. And you would, I mean, it is, you'd want to be there to hold the person's hand in those, you know, final days and hours. And, you know, all that happened, his daughter and some of the cousins spent the last, most of the last week outside the window most of the day at the nursing home. And then the funeral itself, like very limited numbers, not too difficult for us from the point of view of numbers because we're a small family, but very strange experience. For the first time, I celebrated the Eucharist looking down at, I think the number was 25 at that time, people all wearing masks. And as it was a very strange experience, I must say, for me, because you felt you weren't in contact with the people. You didn't know whether they were smiling or crying or whether they were listening to you. So it was a very strange experience. And the whole thing was a strange, difficult experience.
I always think, as a member of clergy, when you come to celebrate the funeral rites of a family member, there's a huge conflict in that you are at once the chief mourner and at the same time you're meant to be the chief consoler. And I think it's a question a lot of people have been kind of asking. And I don't know, is this a question that any of us can answer? Is where is God in all of this? Or is this, you know, I've heard people ask the question, is this, has God created this? Has God made this? You know, leading to awful, heartbreaking family situations. How do you reconcile your faith in God with the reality of the brokenness and the awfulness that sometimes comes with all of this?
Brendan, that's a question I've been wrestling with for the past 60 years. Where is God in all this? And it's a very difficult question, both in this situation of the pandemic and funerals, but also in the wider world, you know, the inequality of life, that life as we see it is not fair. And where is God in it all is very difficult to answer. Certainly you can't answer it without some faith, without some acceptance that God revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ. And certainly his life wasn't fair. His life went about doing good, healing, reconciling people. And yes, he ended up in disgrace, shameful death on the cross. So in some ways, I think God has, if you like, shared that very experience with us, that life is strange and life is very difficult, and that in lots of ways, without faith, life is meaningless. At least for me anyway, life would be quite meaningless without faith. It still doesn't answer the question for me, where is God? I just accept, I suppose, that he is there in the messiness of life. And in some ways that keeps one going in the midst of bereavement, in the midst of, you know, half despair at times, that God himself has shared in that despair and that messiness of life.
You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday evening. Today, the 25th of July, Pope Francis has asked that it be dedicated as a day of prayer for our grandparents and elderly right to throughout the world. Father Liam Lawton now joins us for a little reflection on grandparents.
Prayer for grandparents. Lord, we are privileged to know the blessing of grandparents, to know the knowledge of years, the wisdom of fears, the gift of tears, to know their warm embrace, the kindly face, the unjudging space, the listening place. Lord, may we follow in the footsteps that honor the mystery of their giving, the sacrifices of their living, their gracious forgiving. May they find in us warm compassion and endless passion for life and love. May we move to the gentle rhythm of their living. May we cherish them with empathy and patient giving. May we know the sacredness of faith, blessed by their constant believing in you, Lord, in life, in love, in trust, and in truth. May they be free from anxiety, pain, and sorrow. And may they find in each other a faithful companion, where silence is the bridge to blessed memories of other times and other days. May they never be lonely because we are too busy. May our words of gratitude and thanks never be empty. May the fruits of their lives ripen into a harvest of plenty. May they find joy in their children's children, in the company of loved ones, in the warm embrace of old friends, in the knowledge that your promise never ends. Lord, bless them all the days of their lives.
Fortune 10 times 10.
The voices there of Russell Watson and Aled Jones with May the Good Lord Bless and Keep You. And that brings us close to the end of our programme here for this Sunday evening on Clare FM. And this is our final programme for this current series. We'll return to the airways with Beyond Belief with a new season commencing on the first Sunday in September. Our thanks to all our contributors to the programme over the past season, and particularly to my colleagues and our team here, to Brendan O'Brien, Father Brendan Quinlivan, Joanne O'Brien, and of course Stephen Fletcher, who produced all of our programmes from afar. Thank you, Stephen, for your tremendous work and your contributions to Beyond Belief. We will, of course, continue our broadcast of Mass here on Sunday mornings during the month of August, and that will be at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings on Clare FM. So from all of us on the Beyond Belief team here, we wish you God's blessing during this time. May you get some time to relax and reflect. Slán agus beannacht.